John Gibbons just informing the media that Drew Hutchison is sick tonight, feeling under the weather. And Gibby said something he ate or something. And to do that, sometimes that's what happens. Oh, you're not feeling right, and everything comes together. And again, I can't put too fine a point on it. Drew Hutchison gave up a ground ball single up the middle in the first inning. He gave up a ground ball single to right field in the second inning. He gave up an infield single in the fourth inning. And he gave up a bunt single in the sixth inning. Those were the only four Chicago White Sox who reached base tonight. Drew Hutchison was that close to perfection. No one's going to remember it like that because a four-hit shutout, great, but Drew Hutchison was phenomenal tonight. And the Blue Jays did more than enough offensively, and you know what? This is going to go down again as one of those, the Jays scored more than three runs, can't win games when they only score three runs, but they only needed one. Hutchison was that good. And there have been several games this season that the Blue Jays have won where they only needed to score three runs, but they still wound up scoring 5, 6, 7, 8. This has been a fantastic week for the Blue Jays starting rotation, going back to last Sunday when Mark Burley threw that complete game in the loss in Houston. Gave up four runs on six hits in a 4-2 loss. The next day, Todd Redman came out, got a spot start, wasn't very good. And then the regulars took over. And Aaron Sanchez gave up three runs on six hits and 7 1/3. And Drew Hutchison went 6 2/3 and left with a 3-2 lead with two on and two out. Then R.A. Dickey threw a complete game against the Angels. Then Marco Estrada gave up four runs on six hits over seven innings. Then Burley, three runs on five hits over 7 1/3. Then yesterday, Sanchez gives up two runs on seven hits and 6 2/3. And tonight, this absolute gem from Drew Hutchison, the complete game, four hits, shutout, no walks, eight strikeouts, all four hits on the ground. I don't know that there was a single hard hit ball off of Drew Hutchison tonight. He was just that good. And we want to talk about it. 416-870-0590, star 590 on the cell, long distance, 1-888-666-0590. And what's this, four strong starts in a row now from Hutchison after he went through that issue where he couldn't get through the fifth inning with a big lead? This is four strong starts in a row for him. He's whittled that ERA down from 7.47 to 5.12. And he was incredible tonight. Let's get to those phones. We start off with Rocky and Markham listening on our flagship station, Sportsnet 590 The Fan. Rocky, go ahead.
Thanks for taking my call. What a performance by Drew Hutchison, man. Man, he was amazing. I really think the way the Jays are pitching right now, like if they can keep this up, I really think they could climb up this division, like with the way they're pitching and if they can pick up their offense. And my question to you is, how long are they going to keep the outfield like this? Because we know that I know that Kevin Pillar is a great defender, but he's been struggling lately. And Chris Colabello, we know that he's not a great defender, but he's been lights out hitting wise. And who's the other one? Who's playing left field again?
It's been some Danny Valencia, some Ezekiel Carrera.
Okay, yeah. And, yeah, so how long do you think they're going to keep this outfield like this for?
Well, I don't know that they have a choice. I mean, what can you do?
Right, because I know that Batista took a cortisone shot, I think, was it yesterday, I believe? Or
yep.
And he said that I would believe by next week when they play the Nationals, that's the time he'll be back, right?
Well, that's the goal. We have no idea whether he's going to be able to do that or not.
Right,
but
right.
I, you know, they're not going to make a change in center field by any means. Kevin Pillar's right. Not hitting at all, but But he's still playing the hell out of center field, and they're very happy with that. And you can, you know, you have to, because the difference between Kevin Pillar in center and Ezekiel Carrera in center is big, and certainly bigger than the difference between the two as hitters. I think you leave Chris Colabello in the outfield as long as he's hitting. Unless and until he turns into a pumpkin, he can be in left field every day, even when Jose Bautista's back in right field. And if Colabello does start to fall off, then you platoon him with Carrera until Michael Saunders comes back. And I think that's probably the way it goes. Now, if you're not able to get Jose Bautista back into the outfield, then you got some thinking to do. You know, is Chris Dickerson an option down in Buffalo? He at least can play strong defense in the outfield if need be. So you don't have to run Valencia and Colabello out on the corners every day. Do you lean more on Carrera? I don't know. But, I mean, this is what the Blue Jays are dealing with right now. And it really hasn't bitten them that much. Colabello has had some misplays in the outfield, but his bat has more than made up for it. But really, I mean, it's not like you're going to go trade for a starting outfielder. You can't.
Right. That's true, because eventually Bautista is going to be back at some point. And once he's back, I think everything will be back to normal. But one more thing I want to talk about is Aaron Sanchez. Ever since, like, I remember Sanchez when they had the three L's, Justin Nicolino and Noah Syndergaard. I know they made those true blockbuster trades, and the Jays were really high on Sanchez, and that's why they ended up keeping him. And, man, he's been impressive, man, from the point that he lost control, and now the way he's pitching right now, he has all the confidence he has right now, and I'm so impressed at this point. And I think if Drew Hutchison and Aaron Sanchez can keep this up, I think they have a really, really good chance of breaking it out and probably go on top of the division. Hopefully that would work out, and maybe I don't know if they're going to do any trades, but so far it's been impressive with the rotation they have.
Yeah, the last turn, absolutely, the last turn and a half. Thank you, Rocky. Appreciate the call. And what's amazing is that throughout, I mean, it's two wins in a row, so we're not going to get too excited here. You know, there's no Devin Travis. There's been no Jose Bautista. Jose Reyes just back for the one game. But what's been amazing is that in the entirety of that terrible run that the Blue Jays had, four wins in 15 games, they lost a game and a half in the standings in the AL East. The division has been so bad. And right now, they're in the bottom of the eighth inning in St. Petersburg, and the Tampa Bay Rays trail the Seattle Mariners 3-1. So if Seattle wins that game, the Blue Jays, yes, will still be in last place in the American League East, but they will be 3.5 games out of first place, which is just silly. As terrible as the Blue Jays have been, and it really does appear as though they're starting to turn it around right now, the division is wide open. It is there for the taking. They could be in first place by the end of the week, with zero exaggeration. I think maybe go 5-2 and be in first place at the end of the week. I don't expect that to happen, but the divisions are there, and it's still there. Even with all the moaning and all the rending of garments and all the how horrible this is and blow it up and fire everybody, they're 20 minutes away from being 3.5 games out of first place, having won 5 of their last 16 games. More of your calls coming up. John Gibbons addressed the media after the game, as he always does. But before we hear from Gibby, let's hear from the man who spun gold today. Drew Hutchison was phenomenal, and Barry Davis spoke to him on the field right after the game.
Did you have this in mind?
Yeah, it was nice. We had a real complete game today. You know, the offense went out there and, you know, put up runs early, and I was able to get some quick innings. Got a lot of double play balls. The defense, you know, we did a great job picking it out there. So it's a good win.
You had a complete game shutout about a year ago in Texas. Does this one feel even better for you because you didn't walk a single batter tonight either?
Yeah, I mean, you know, I went out there and I found the zone and, you know, I was able to get ahead a lot in strike one and, you know, had my sinker going and got a lot of ground balls. And that's the key to getting, you know, deep into the game. And I was glad we could give the bullpen the night off.
Coming into this game, the one of the troubles you had was getting the first batter out of an inning. Only once tonight did the first batter reach base, and that was the Bonifacio bunt. How big is that for you as a pitcher to get that first out right away?
Yeah, definitely. Anytime you get the first out, you know, it makes things, you know, a little bit easier. But, you know, I was able to just, you know, continue to pound the zone and, you know, I was able to get some quick outs.
And finally, what does it mean for a pitcher to get the offense that early into a game? You don't have to battle it in a scoreless game for four or five innings and wait.
I mean, with our offense, you know it's going to happen sooner or later. You know, I've gotten some big leagues this year and didn't do a great job with it, so I was able to go out there and continue to pound the zone and, you know, go after guys, and, you know, it was a good game.
All right, listen, congratulations. Go enjoy it. Thank you.
Thank you.
So there's Drew Hutchison with Barry Davis on Sportsnet Television, and Drew, as he always is, zero emotion. That was probably the best game he's ever thrown in his major league career. This close, a couple of bounces from being a perfect game for Drew Hutchison. The Blue Jays beat the White Sox 6-0. They are even on this homestand now at 4-4 with two more games to go against a Chicago team that they really seem to beat up a lot of the time. We'll hear from John Gibbons shortly, but first let's get back to the phones. Steve is in Hudson's Hope, British Columbia. Hello, Steve.
Hey, Mike. How are you doing?
I'm doing all right. Where is Hudson's Hope? I've never heard of it.
Yeah, it's a little tiny place way northeastern British Columbia.
Very nice.
Yeah. Hey, before a comment on tonight's game and then a question I have, I just want to say you guys are the best. I mean, I only listen on radio. I don't even have television, but I listen on radio, and I try to listen to broadcasts through the year of the broadcasters from other teams. And I really like John and Susan in New York, but you guys are the best. I mean, hands down, there's no question that you make listeners feel like you're sitting in the ballpark.
And wow,
it's incredible. It's an incredible experience listening on the radio to you guys.
I appreciate that a lot, and we certainly try our best, and I'm sure Jerry and Joe appreciate that as well. And, of course, Tom Young, our marvelous engineer and producer, without whom it wouldn't sound nearly the same. Well, you pick us up from Vancouver?
No, I hear the games on at-bat
on
the Major League. And often I have to listen to archive games, which is why I don't call you. I was thinking of calling the last couple of weeks, but I can't when I have to listen to archived games. So, anyway, God, what an incredible game. I mean, I'm an eternal optimist, and I mean, this last 3 weeks has been pretty darn tough. But to have Jose Reyes come back tonight and hit a double in his first at bat, and have this performance by Drew following this string of great starts, I mean, it's a real boost. I'm absolutely loving it tonight. I mean, this is incredible, and I've just got a feeling. I mean, I know it's just a few games, but I've just got this feeling. It's my optimism that this is going to continue, and the American League East is going to start quaking in its boots watching what the Blue Jays start to do.
Look, it's not necessarily optimism. I mean, you've heard me on this program all year long telling people that this pitching is not this bad, that this is a good team. Just, you know, let it happen, and it's starting to happen.
That's right. That's what I think.
They're still under 500. I don't think you can realistically talk about winning a division or anything like that until you at least have a winning record, although there's a distinct possibility that before the end of the month, the leader in the American League East will be under 500.
Sure.
But this is a good team, and we weren't kidding in the spring when we were talking about how good this team can be.
Right.
And you don't have to win 98 games to win this division this
That's
year
right.
by any means.
That's right.
Yeah.
That's right. Hey, so I mean, this was amazing tonight. I've got a question for you, and like I said, I wanted to call the last couple of weeks, but it's just hard for me to do because of the archive games.
Right.
But I wonder what you think about whether Jose Bautista should have been DL'd at the start of this injury.
Nope.
And
absolutely
if maybe
not.
He should have been. Oh, you don't think so?
Nope.
Okay.
No, he's been very, very productive since he's been DH only.
Well,
I mean, he's only hit three home runs in 24 games or 24 starts, which is certainly below his rate. But he's got a .387 on base. He's got a .470 slugging percentage.
Yep.
He's been a very productive hitter.
Okay, I mean, I get that now, and I I understand that this is not a fair, probably not a really fair comparison that I'm going to make. But if you look at the last 3 weeks to what Jose's done in the last four seasons, his batting average is the lowest that it's ever been.
Well,
compared
that's
to those seasons,
not
his
true.
On base is
compared
great.
To full
his on base
seasons,
is still
yes.
great at .392. I mean, that's fabulous.
Yeah.
That's what I've got for the last 3 weeks. That's fabulous.
When did you start? 3 weeks.
21 days ago.
So May 2nd.
Was today the 24th? Something like that.
Okay, and, so and right it, after he went 4-for-8 in two games with three doubles. But
I get it. And six. And his slugging. During that period, from just the last 3 weeks, I've got .411, which is less than it's been. His OPS then .803 is
way less lower
than it's been. And the only thing I'm thinking is it's just not the Jose that we're used to, and maybe the time on the DL to let him recover and to also handle the problem of Justin Smoke not getting to play and Edwin having to play first base every day, which potentially is trouble.
It potentially is. It hasn't been yet, but look, you're right. He hasn't been the hitter that he's generally. He hasn't been that top level bat. But an 800 OPS is still better than what Justin Smoke's likely to do. He's still a big threat. He still gets on base all the time. He's still being a productive hitter. And I'd rather have that and maybe have him heal a little more slowly, if it's even doing any harm, we don't know, than to not have him at all for 15 days. And sure, Edwin will DH and Smoke will play first and all that stuff, but you're missing a very, very, very threatening hitter who remains a threatening hitter, even not at 100%.
Yeah, I get it. I just wanted to throw that out and see what you thought about it. I mean, I would hate to see him gone too, but it just seems like we're not getting from Jose what we normally would get from Jose, and
but
in conjunction with what this might mean for both Edwin and for Justin Smoke not getting to play and having to play first base too much, that maybe it would have been a better decision.
But you're still getting more out of him than you would be getting out of his replacement, right?
Well, do we know that for sure?
Pretty much. Who else provides historically?
You can't go just by the last two games, I agree. But pretty much. I wonder.
Well, I mean, yeah, they've scored 14 runs in two games without Jose Bautista in the lineup.
Yeah, well, no, I was just thinking how Justin Smoke has performed in the last two games. And you can't go by just those two games.
But you can't suggest that, you know, Justin Smoke in the last two games is 3-for-7 with a home run and four RBIs. So, the idea that Justin Smoke is going to be a .429 hitter and drive in 600 runs for you, even without the 600 runs.
Yeah,
but,
I know.
You know, the idea that he's going to be 3-for-7 on a regular basis, it just stands in stark, stark contrast to anything he's ever done over the course of his major league career.
Yeah, okay. I understand what you're saying. I'm just concerned that this long stint of Jose, well, I mean, you're right, we don't know.
Right.
This long stint of him just
I get it, Steve. I gotta let you go.
Okay, that's cool, man. You guys are great.
I appreciate the concern. Thank you. And you know, it's something that a lot of people agree with. Jose Bautista should be DL'd. And I don't see it at all. At all. He's not the 50 home run guy that he was. But we're still talking about an 800 OPS. We're talking about an on-base percentage close to .400. This is a guy who should be playing as long as he's willing to be playing. We'll take more of your phone calls on the other side, but I want to hear from the manager. So here's John Gibbons and his thoughts after today's 6-0 win over the White Sox.
Gibby, why can't Hutch pitch like that every time out?
He does a lot. Maybe you haven't been watching.
Seriously, though. How early? Well, did I mean, he how, had, early, no, how early did you? Could you tell that he had his?
Well, I'm really. You could tell. You could tell early on he was sick tonight too. You know, and sometimes you have your best games when you're not feeling so good. But he, I mean, he's really hitting on everything. He had the good exploding fastball, some good breaking balls. They mixed in some good change, you know, some change ups, and so he had him swinging. You know, he's hitting the zone, and I don't even know if he broke a sweat tonight. You know, but that was one of those games you feel it's nice to sit back and watch it, you know, because he was in total control. I don't know. I don't know. Maybe something he ate or something. I don't know.
After his last start, he was pretty frustrated with himself for not being able to get deeper into that game. What do you think about his mentality? What do you like about the, kind of that mentality where he looks at a game like that and he gets frustrated? He doesn't necessarily take the good. He looks more at kind of what he didn't do in a given outing.
Well, really, that's the way Hutch is wired. You know, he expects to go nine innings every night he goes out there. He's one of those guys, he's accountable, you know, and there's many times he's too tough on himself, you know, you pitch in the big leagues. I mean, you're going to get hit around every now and then. That's just at this level. But it's what drives him. You know, he's a great competitor. You guys all know that. You've seen it. He's got a great sense of team, you know, and he knows things as part of his job. He's got to get deep in the game. It saves the bullpen, this and that. And that kind of attitude's only going to make him better and get the most out of him. You know, but like I said, there is times he's a little bit too tough on himself, but that's what motivates him.
John, Hutch came into the game really struggling with the first batter of each inning. I think the batting average against was the highest in the league. Tonight he retired 8 of the 9. Other than the Bonifacio bunt single, how key is that to his success when he can get that first batter out of an inning?
Well, I mean, it's key to everybody. When they go, you know, you get that first guy gets on, it really opens up, you know, a lot of things the team can do. You know, you get that first out, it changes the whole complexion of an inning. But, you know, Hutch, yeah, I know that maybe that's his stats this year, but, you know, and year and a couple months that I've been with him, I've seen him really good. You know, tonight was a great night, of course, but we've seen him really good too. And I can even go back to a game last year in Philly where I think he was cruising along. I don't even know if he maybe had no hits, one hit or something. They dropped a grand slam on him, and I think in the sixth or the seventh, then he came back out and shut him down for two more innings, and we went on to win the game. They tied it, I think it was. So I've seen Hutch really, really good. You know, he's. You know, he battles some things like most young guys do. You know, we forget that sometimes, but I've seen the kid good an awful lot.
You've had about a week's worth of pretty decent starts all of a sudden. Do you have any explanation for that from your starting staff?
Well, I mean, they're all better than the way we were pitching. No doubt about that. You know, who knows how long this stretch will run, but we went on that nice little run last year at 20-something. Consecutive games with 6-plus innings or more, I think it was. We set a record, team record. So it's in there. I mean, that's kind of a rare feat, but, you know, these guys are fully capable of definitely pitching better than they were, you know.
And now they are. And Drew Hutchison, just the latest example. The Blue Jays take down the White Sox 6-0. It's the Honda Postgame Show on the Sportsnet Radio Network. Blue Jays talk will continue on our flagship station, Sportsnet 590 The Fan, but not online. Got Stanley Cup playoffs online, so you can only find us on the radio, but the phone lines are open, and we will continue to take your calls right up until 11 o'clock Eastern time. Now, two out in the bottom of the ninth in St. Pete, Seattle leading the Rays 4-1. Amazingly, the Blue Jays are seconds away from being 3.5 games out of first place in the American League East, despite a 21-26 record. We're back at it tomorrow, 7 o'clock Eastern, for 7:07 first pitch, R.A. Dickey against the lefty John Danks. You've been listening to Home Hardware Blue Jays Baseball, brought to you by Home Hardware, homeowners helping homeowners with expert advice. For Jerry Howard, Joe Siddle, Tom Young, Derek Brandeo, and Mark Boffo. I'm Mike Wilner. Blue Jays Talk continues. For everybody else, good night from Rogers.
That's a loose swing, a line drive deep right center field. Long drive. Adam Eaton is just looking up. There she goes. Number 10 for Donaldson. Second Blue Jay in double digits with Edwin's 12. And the Blue Jays lead Chicago 5-0.
That was more than enough for Drew Hutchison, who was nearly perfect tonight. A Maddox, 96 pitches, a complete game shutout, no walks, 8 strikeouts. The Blue Jays beat the White Sox by a score of 6-0. I'm Mike Wilner. This is Blue Jays Talk. It's over in St. Pete. Mariners beat the Rays 4-1. So the Blue Jays are 3.5 games out of first place. That's just silly. Silly. At 21-26, if they were in the American League Central Division, they'd be 9 games out of first place. Well, Kansas City lost tonight, so 8.5 games out of first place. If they were in the American League West Division, led by the Houston Astros, who are 29-17, they would be 8.5 games out of first place. 3.5 games out in the weak AL East. Just crazy that the Blue Jays playing the way they have over the first quarter of the season. And yes, they've started to turn it around very nicely right now. Well within striking distance with so many people braying to blow this thing up and fire everybody. They could be in first place by the end of the week. It would be with a losing record, so it'd be kind of funny, but they could. 416-870-0590, star 590 on the cell, long distance 1-888-666-0590. Susan is in Ottawa. Welcome to Blue Jays Talk.
Hi, thanks. I just wanted you to know how much we enjoyed listening to the game tonight. We were traveling. We left Moncton, New Brunswick at 9 this morning, and we just pulled into our driveway in Russell, Ontario.
Wow.
Enjoyed the whole game. And to quote Phil Hirsch from a sign I saw at the Baseball Hall of Fame in Cooperstown, baseball is the only game you can watch on the radio.
Yeah, isn't it, though? I mean, thank you so much. We do our best here to paint that picture for you.
It was enjoyable, and we're glad to see Reyes back.
Or hear Reyes back.
Yeah, ooh. Or hear him, yeah.
Yeah.
But the way that we watch the radio, I saw him.
Well, I hope that while you were watching on the radio, you were looking at the road, too.
So thanks a lot.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
Appreciate that.
Okay,
Susan
bye.
In Russell, Ontario. Thank you. That's a great call. Love those calls. Dave in Toronto. You're up next on Blue Jays Talk. Hello.
Mike, thanks for taking my call.
Thanks for calling.
Awesome game tonight. Was down at the Dome, listened to the whole thing on the radio from behind the Jays dugout. Enjoyed your chatter in about the fifth or sixth inning with Soto and his theatrics running around behind the plate tonight.
That's crazy, wasn't it? I don't know. I wouldn't call it theatrics.
I was watching that the first half of the game, was hoping that somebody upstairs had picked up on it. And sure enough, when you picked up the mic in the fifth, it was one of the first things out of your mouth.
Oh, I couldn't wait.
Listen, you were just mentioning the calls for Gibby's head and everybody else's over the last week or so, and that just got me thinking about Redmond's spot start last Monday on Victoria Day Monday. Sailed through the lineup through the first 3 innings, and then when he came back out for the fourth, I think a lot of us were questioning the decision when he got knocked around for 3 runs. Of course, Osuna ended up picking up the win, and the Jays pulled it off. But hindsight being what it is. I'm wondering if perhaps Gibby deserves a little bit of credit for that move, having given guys in the rotation a little bit of extra time off between starts. And, of course, now everyone will get the extra day this Thursday as well, and then another one next week. So with everyone being a little better rested, I'm just wondering if that's just the guys finding their legs or if you think Gibby deserves a little bit of credit.
Well, I mean, it wasn't just Gibby's decision to do that. It was everybody, Gibby and Alex Anthopoulos and Pete Walker. And they did it 3 times last year with Liam Hendricks, and it helped. And I think that led them to wanting to do it again this year, and it helped. But, you know, it just gives you a little bit of a breather. And like you said, now there's an off day Thursday. And then the Blue Jays have the next three Thursdays off after only two off days in the whole month of May. Like, the Jays have had one day off as we sit here, one day off since April 21st. So it's been an incredibly long run of games for them. When they finish that Wednesday afternoon's game, that will be their 36th game or 35th game in 36 days.
Yeah.
So it was the right move at the right time to do that. I'm not going to give just John Gibbons credit for that. I would say that was more of an organizational decision, but to the point. I mean, it's not just John Gibbons that so many people have wanted fired over the last few days.
Yeah, that's, I think, more what I meant. Just, you know, people questioning how the club's being managed right now in general. I think, you know, that was a move that at the time, you know, raised a lot of eyebrows. But looking back over the last 8 or 9 days, you know, performances have been there from the starting pitching, and it's really been you know, more the bats that have gone silent, you know, with exception for the last couple of days, obviously.
Yeah, and the bats have gone silent for good reason. I mean, the players just aren't there. And now there's slowly is a slow trickle of them starting to come back. You had Reyes coming back today. Travis will be back in a week. And hopefully Bautista will be able to play the field sometime in between those two things. So it's starting. I mean, the Blue Jays have not had their starting lineup once this year. Not once. And it's something that people need to bear in mind when you look at a team that's going through some periods of what seemed like complete and utter ineptitude. But like Gibbons always said every day, they were just getting beat. They weren't kicking the ball around. They weren't you know, just doing stupid stuff. They were just not good enough. And now, hopefully, that's starting to turn around as the pitching started to come around.
Yeah. Just one last question real quickly, and then I'll let you go. One guy we haven't talked about all that much who's among the many, among the injured ranks right now, but Deonner Navarro. You know, arguably there's not room for him on the lineup right now anyway, without sending Toley back down. But even just to showcase him for a potential trade bait in July, if there's a move to be had that is attractive to Anthopoulos, where's he at with his recovery? I haven't heard too much on him recently.
Yeah, the last I heard was not good. A week and a half or so ago, I think they'd said he had a setback, and so the process was slowed. I don't know if he had to start all over again, but I don't think he's anywhere near returning at this point. But we'll see. We'll keep asking, and you know, we ask for injury updates pretty much every day, and they tell us, and then we tell you. Blue Jays beat the White Sox 6-0 behind a phenomenal performance from Drew Hutchison tonight. Let's get back out west. Dale is somewhere in Saskatchewan. Welcome to the program.
Hey, thank you, Mike. You and I had a conversation. I was my first-time caller last time.
All right, so your second-time caller this time. Awesome.
Yeah, still from the flesh.
Glad to hear it.
I was going to give you a hard time about Bautista, but then I see you already had that done already, so I'm going to back off on that one.
Well, thanks. I appreciate you wanting to call in to give me a hard time.
Somebody's got to do it.
Yeah, nobody does that on this program.
Well, no, I never ever heard that. Anyway,
no,
anyway,
of course not.
Yeah. Anyways, I was just going to call back in and in regards to our conversation last time in regards to Bautista and smoke, and I was going to just point out the fact that smoke actually has been doing quite good for 40 some at bats, you know, and
yeah, smoke's been,
you know,
fine.
Anyways,
but there's no set of circumstances under which you would prefer to have Justin Smoke in the lineup over Jose Bautista.
Well,
none whatsoever.
Okay, that's a difference of opinion because
it better not be.
As far as I'm concerned, I would much rather have Smoke at first base than Edwin. And
yes,
I'd much rather have Bautista in right field.
Sure, okay, but that's not possible right now.
That was the point that I tried to bring up last time, eh?
But I you know, I'd rather win the lottery, but that's not happening either. You know, you can't have Jose Bautista is not capable of playing right field.
Is that not what the team was made up to be at, when we came out of spring training? It was supposed to be Smoke at first base.
Yep.
Bautista at right field.
Yep.
And Edwin at DH.
Yes, and when people get hurt, you can't.
And when you give me the slugging percentage and stuff like that, and I said to you that, okay, I didn't have all the stats with me when I was talking to you last time.
Uh-huh.
The stats being, you know, Bautista was not doing really great, okay? Yeah, he had a great on-base percentage because he got a lot of walks.
Yes, okay? Which is good.
But he wasn't driving in the runs, which is what he's paid for.
Dale, we're not going to have the same conversation that we had the last time you called. I can't imagine you would want to call in again to have the exact same conversation. Look, the Blue Jays, you're right.
It's not the same conversation.
Well, it's becoming that. But you're right. Well, the way the Blue Jays wanted it to be.
Also, in the same regard, Smoke has come into the ball game and done things in the last two games that
he said,
didn't do.
Two wonderful games.
Is driving and runs.
Yes.
Right?
Yes. Again, there is no set of circumstances.
On the sidelines now. And
I'll be back
Do you disagree with the fact that that's where he needs to be right now to get 100%?
I'm
not saying anything against Bautista.
No, I understand that.
He's a great guy.
But it doesn't matter whether he's a great guy.
Part of the team.
Right.
But he needs to be 100%.
Well, no, because
50%.
70% of Jose Bautista is still better than 90% of the players in the major leagues.
No. I disagree with you. 100%, 110% on that one.
There's no such thing as 110%. But you're entitled to disagree with me on that, and I can tell that you think
that. I know. And I don't want you to, I don't want to get into a disagreement where you don't accept the call from me again or anything else like that. All I'm saying is that when Smoke came in, did he not do the job that was needed to be done?
Yes, he's had two good games.
Yeah.
There is no rational perspective that Justin Smoke should ever play over Jose Bautista if Jose Bautista is capable of playing. There just isn't. You cannot make that. I mean, you can make the argument, but it doesn't stand up to any scrutiny at all. And it's wonderful that he's had two great games. And look, I'm the one who was ridiculed in the spring for saying that I think Justin Smoke's going to hit 25 or 30 home runs for the Blue Jays this year. That's probably not going to happen because he's basically been a bit player for the last month with Bautista able to not do anything but DH. But look, if I have a choice, if I can use only one of Jose Bautista or Justin Smoke, I'm using Bautista 1,000 times out of 1,000, period. Justin in Thornhill. Hey, Justin.
Good evening, Mike. Nice to hear your voice again. I've been listening to you for a long time, and I hope to talk to you many more times this season. My question for you tonight is, what exactly was going on with Giovanni Soto behind the plate?
I don't know, but I wrote a column about it, and it'll be up on sportsnet.ca sometime around midnight Eastern. He has the thing. He very clearly has the thing, the yips, Steve Blass disease, whatever you want to call it. But Giovanni Soto, it appears, is not capable of throwing the ball back to the pitcher without going through a series of almost obsessive-compulsive machinations. He has said, he spoke to the Chicago Sun-Times, and he said that he's trying to keep the dirt smooth around the plate so that there aren't any bad hops. But seriously, I mean, there's something going on, and it's between the ears. And, you know, you never know when that's going to come up. You never know when it's going to go away. It has ended careers. But he seems to be able to get through it. For some reason, only 9 people have tried to steal a base with him behind the plate this year. 8 of them have been successful. But there's very, very clearly something going on with Giovanni Soto behind the plate.
Yeah, I've never seen that before. Anyways, thank you for taking my call.
All right, thank you. And I find it so interesting. And maybe that's my psych degree talking. And I did mention the DSM-5 having the thing in it earlier. I just find it so interesting. It happened to Mackie Sasser, who was an up-and-coming young catcher for the New York Mets, and he just all of a sudden was incapable of throwing the ball back to the pitcher. It happened to Dale Murphy, who was a young catcher coming up with the Atlanta Braves, and all of a sudden couldn't throw the ball back to the pitcher, so they made him into an outfielder. Happened to Russ Adams here in Toronto. Couldn't throw the ball to first from shortstop. Happened to Chuck Knobloch, Steve Sachs. Steve Blass. I mean, a lot of people call it Steve Blass disease, the thing. It happened to Rick Ankiel and Mark Wohlers, but I don't count that because often those are the control problems that are the precursor to Tommy John surgery, and they both wound up having Tommy John surgery. But Steve Blass, 30-year-old, 100-game winner in the major leagues, coming off a season in 1972 where he finished second in Cy Young voting, had a career 3 walks per 9 innings over almost a decade in the major leagues. And then in 1973, 84 walks in 88 and two-thirds innings, 12 at-batsmen, 9 wild pitches, an ERA of 10, a whip over 2, and he was out of baseball the next year. That's what the thing can do. And Giovanni Soto appears to have the thing because he can't throw the ball back to the mound unless he puts his right knee down on the ground, and then he puts his left knee down on the ground, and then he puts his glove on the ground, and then he tosses it lightly back to the pitcher, and then he wipes at the dirt with his bare hand. Crazy, but really, really cool. Blue Jays beat the White Sox 6-0. We got a lot of calls from out west tonight. Pat is in Critter, Saskatchewan. I have never heard of Critter, Saskatchewan. Pat, welcome aboard.
Hi, it's about 80 kilometers north of Saskatoon.
All right.
Anyways, I was just calling to see what you thought of my suggestion. I think I could improve the bullpen and the starting rotation with a trade. And that would be put Estrada back in long relief and promote Matt Boyd to the rotation.
Well, Matt Boyd's having a hell of a year in New Hampshire.
He just pitched 7 innings and won 4-1 at Double A.
Tonight?
He stretched out. That was Sunday.
Yeah, he's very stretched out. He's made
got
9 starts in Double
ERA.
A. Yep.
Got
an ERA just above one.
Whip.
Yep.
And he struck out 56 and 57 in the third innings, and he's only allowed 13 walks and 1 home run.
51 in the third innings, actually.
He's got
yeah.
very similar stats as he did in Dunedin last year.
Yeah, he was exceptional in Dunedin last year. I am a little wary of that. You know, the Blue Jays started this year with 6 rookies, and only 2 of them have worked out, and only one of them's playing right now. The other one's on the disabled list.
But
I think there
you
was
know what? If he doesn't make it with the Blue Jays, they can put him in Buffalo because he deserves the promotion anyways.
Right.
You know.
Yeah, but I think Daniel Norris
is
readier for the major leagues and was certainly more ready for the major leagues and last year. And he came up and he flamed
better than
out.
Norris. Up
no,
to,
no, he has.
Up to Double A last year.
Boyd has pitched better. Yeah, Boyd has been terrific. And he's older. He's a college kid. He's 24 years old.
Yeah.
I think that the Blue Jays, though, are a little wary of handing the ball to kids who've never played in the major leagues after what happened at the beginning of this season with Norris and Castro and Pompey having had to go back down.
Yeah, well, it could happen. It
yeah.
might not, eh? But I was thinking of another, I was thinking of a rule that might help out baseball, too, eh? Is, you know, all these guys shuttling back and forth, and maybe instead of doing that, just have a 28-man roster with only 25 guys dressing for each game.
Yeah, I've heard you that know? Idea before of sort of a taxi squad hanging around
yeah.
the team, and you have to pick which 25 you're going to use before every game. I don't think we're going to see that. I don't know that it's such a great thing. I think that you need to have your guys playing. And, you know, with your AAA team in Buffalo, it's nothing to bring them back and forth all the time. I don't know that. I'm pretty sure the major league owners won't want to have to pay 3 extra big league salaries when they could be paying 3 minor league salaries. But it's definitely an interesting thought, one that I don't think is necessary, but certainly I know that there are a lot of people who like that idea.
Well, you know, like the Jays don't have a great record for right-handed pitching this year, eh? And that way they could, you know, they could have a combination of relievers and backup fielders or something, you know. I think that would benefit the whole team. You know.
Oh, it would definitely be a benefit to have extra people around, for sure. And that's one of the reasons why the rosters are limited to what they are. Yeah.
Yeah.
Thanks, Pat. Appreciate the call. Blue Jays beat the White Sox 6-0 tonight behind a virtuoso performance from Drew Hutchison, which nobody wants to say anything about other than, wow, he was great. Anyways, Sam's in Toronto. Hey, Sam, you're next on Jays Talk.
Hey, Mike. I remember sitting around last year at the trade deadline waiting for something to happen. I'm not trying to put words in your mouth, but I think, and I guess you can confirm this, you said that you expect something to happen this year.
Yep.
The Jays are in the thick of things.
I expected something to happen last year, too.
All right, so I guess you're expecting it as much as you were last year. And
well, I don't think the right deal was there last year, and that's mm-hmm. what I talked about last season on July 31st and leading up to it. And if the right deal is there for the Blue Jays this year, I don't think there will be any restrictions on them being able to do it, assuming the team is in a position where, you know, a trade for help this year will be meaningful.
Right. To me, at least, the Blue Jays seem to have there's two ways of looking at the team. You've got this great pitching staff, a youthful pitching staff that's between the minors and being a young major league squad. And then you have, obviously, these two old guys who are pretty good.
Right.
And I don't know if you said to me, and maybe this is just I appreciate the opinion that you can say once you're in the playoffs, anything's possible. But as the record says, we're not a spectacular team by any means. We might win the division. We might squeak into a wild card, although I don't really see that. But let's say we win the division. We're still not a great team.
Right.
If the best team wins or one of the better teams win.
That's not the way it works, though.
I know that's not the way it works. But
well, but then why have that as your hypothesis? Is that's not the way it works?
Because the bad teams, the worst team doesn't often win. Is that fair?
The worst team doesn't often win. Yeah, but no team wins often, right? Like the St. Louis Cardinals a couple of years ago had, what, 83, 84 wins, and they won the World Series. You never want to be the eighth seed, obviously.
Mm-hmm.
But I firmly believe that after the wild cards are done, each of the remaining eight teams has a 12.5% chance of winning the World Series.
All right. So I guess the part I'm trying to get to is it would seem, and I'd imagine you probably agree, would be a bad decision to trade one of the really young guys or Hoffman or Norris at the deadline.
Depending on what you get back.
Right. But do you see any pieces that the Jays really could trade? I don't think Navarro can really bring much in. Do you see a trade that they could make at the deadline for somebody?
Well, I mean, that's 2 months down the road. And you know, you see a lot of trades made for B and C prospects. And the Blue Jays can, you know, have those just as much as anybody else has those. A Chase Headley deal, a Martin Prado deal, trades like that. For helpful pieces or trades for relievers, you don't have to give up any of those people that you've talked about. Sometimes you just give up organizational guys. Sometimes, you know, you give up a scrappy Aaron Loop type who's making his way up into A ball or double A ball. But, you know, if you're not talking about trading for a Johnny Cueto or something like that, there are lots of trades made at the deadline where you get a real honest-to-goodness big league player and give up nothing. Those happen all the time.
All right. Well, thanks for taking my call.
All right. And the Blue Jays this year, we believe, have money that was left over that they didn't spend on the major league payroll to start the season. Somewhere in the neighborhood of $5 to $8 million as a war chest. And on July 31st, when two-thirds of the season is over, $8 million buys you $24 million worth of players. And yeah, to get big stuff, you got to give up big talent. but to get a couple of helpful pieces for the bullpen. Another backup outfielder. Those sorts of things. Seattle Mariners did not give up the farm to get Chris D'Onofrio last year, is what I'm trying to say. Eric is in Ottawa. Hey, Eric. Hey, Eric in Ottawa.
Good evening.
Good evening.
I had the fortune of attending baseball this weekend in Ottawa, and it's great to have professional baseball back. And as you mentioned, Caliballo's one hit away from joining the 700 club as a Can-Am player, so he's welcome to come and play for Ottawa. You might as well bring a pitcher for us as well, because the last three games we've given up 38 runs.
That's not good.
They won 2 out of 3.
They won 2 out of 3? Or they gave up 30 in one of the games?
Well, today they gave up 30 runs. They had two 10-run innings.
Wow.
Yeah, but so they'll be short of pitching. So if you have any extra, please send them down to your Canadian neighbors down here.
I'll see if Joe's available to pitch tomorrow.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So I wanted to ask, how is Caliballo at playing first?
He's all right. He's fine, but why would you put him there when you have needs elsewhere?
No, I'm just looking at the possibilities. The way his bat is, we're going to have to somehow keep his bat in the lineup, but there's going to be times when we're going to hopefully have our full starting outfield roster. And I'm sure hoping Pilar will still keep developing as a hitter. I always hoped he'd turn into like a Shannon Stewart type of hitter who can find a way to get on base 2 to 3 times a game.
Wow, you know, that's asking a lot. No one in history has ever been able to do that. But Kevin Pilar's in a really, really, really major slide right now. And I don't think that this is who he is as a hitter. As much as I didn't think that when he was hitting 280 that was really who he was as a hitter, but as long as he continues to play the hell out of center field, I don't think the Blue Jays will have a problem throwing him out there every day. But it's a little too far down the road for me to wonder what's going to go on with Caliballo when everybody gets back, because first of all, he has to continue to hit, which is something that he's never done in the major leagues, is continue to hit consistently on a long-term basis. Now, he hasn't had a ton of opportunity, and this is going to be a real opportunity, because as long as he hits, he's in this lineup, and even when it dries up for a while, he'll still be out there every day because of what he's done. But Michael Saunders isn't going to be back till probably July, so that's the point at which, you know, a decision's going to have to be made. And who knows what this team's going to look like at that point. Who'll be healthy? Who won't be? Who'll be hitting? Who won't be? Where they'll be in the standings? How they'll be doing? It's a little too far ahead, I think, to worry about that. But I don't know if there's going to be like a Caliballo versus Smoke thing happening. Smoke is a much, much, much better defender at first base, and he's got a ton of power too. So I kind of think that it'll play out. We'll see where we are. If Michael Saunders comes back and everybody else is healthy, then they'll have a decision to make. But the odds of that happening are very low.
Well, the keys, I think, have been the way we've been able to utilize Buffalo's roster. And now we've got such strength up the middle with Travis and Goins and Reyes and of course, Pilar. So you can really build on that, and hopefully we can get on a bit of a roll, especially as you get later in the season where you play more against the AL East competitors, which inevitably there'll probably only be one out of the East that makes it to the playoffs.
Well, I wouldn't say that that's inevitable yet. I mean, there's still 115 games left in the season. A lot of things can happen, but the American League East certainly does look like the weak sister, no question. But they don't get back in it for real until about September 4th. So there's a long way to go between now and then. Thanks for the call, Eric. Appreciate it. Appreciate them all. And we will continue to take your calls. And we'll hear from Jose Bautista as we continue. It's Blue Jays Talk on Sportsnet 590 The Fan.
Smoke hits one deep to right field. Long, high, deep drive. Majestic drive. Heading back to the bullpen. There she goes. A two-run home run for Justin Smoke. His third. And that doubles the count now to 4-0.
All in the first inning, a two-run single for Chris Colabello, then a two-run homer by Justin Smoke, and that was more than enough for Drew Hutchison, who was masterful tonight. Four ground balls away from a perfect game as the Blue Jays beat the White Sox 6-0. I'm Mike Wilner. This is Blue Jays Talk. Taking your calls at the top of the hour. We'll hear from Jose Bautista in a second, but first, back to the phones. And this time, we're going out east. We've spent most of the night in Western Canada. Randy is in Moncton. Welcome aboard, Randy.
Geez, hard act to follow when you say Drew Hutchison. What am I supposed to do with that?
Maritimes represent, man.
There you go. Just a couple of things. As far as trades and managerial changes go, how about the Oakland A's and how about the Miami Marlins? Be careful about making quick decisions that might come back to haunt you. And I don't get the Marlins thing at all.
Well, nobody does.
Yeah, I mean, that's wacky. But it is Jeffrey Loria, so I guess I shouldn't be surprised. Anyway, the Jose Bautista thing, I was watching the telecast yesterday, and they mentioned that he had a cortisone shot.
Yep.
He hasn't thrown yet, has he?
Yes, he has.
Oh, he now has.
He hasn't really unleashed it or anything like that, but he was throwing a little bit last week.
Okay, so, all right. Because for a while we were hearing he hadn't thrown for a month.
Yeah, it was close. It was close to a month without throwing.
Well, I mean, it's... You don't want to be looking at shoulder surgeries and stuff, but it doesn't sound like it's that serious. It sounds like with enough time off, he'd be able to become healthy and play the outfield. And, you know, the more he plays, the more places he plays, the better your team is. So,
right.
You just hope it's not that serious because you kind of wondered there for a while.
Well, they'd always said that, you know, all the tests showed no structural damage. It was just inflammation. So, you know, he says that, and we'll hear from him next, he said exploratory surgery would have been the next thing, but he absolutely does not want to do that. So that's not even on the table for him, it sounded like.
Drew Hutchison's pitched four good games in a row. That's you know, he's starting to come around. What are Casey Jansen's numbers in Washington? Do you know?
I think he's thrown in one game. I think he made his debut like Thursday or Friday for them.
All right. Well, a good. We'll let this bullpen work in progress thing play itself out. Then, if that's the case, cause, you know, no point having guys in your lineup that aren't going to play. Anyway, good enough.
All right. Thank you. Nice to hear from the East. We heard a lot from the West tonight. Not that we don't love to hear from the West. We'll hear from anybody, and we're happy to hear from you at 416-870-0590 *590 on the cell long distance. 1-888-666-0590. We will take more of your phone calls in a couple of minutes as we work our way towards the top of the hour and Jeff Sammet and Sportsnet tonight. But first, Jose Bautista held court with a massive assemblage of media, involved even a little pushing and shoving among some of the media members as they worked to encircle Joseph W. Batts. And he insisted right off the top that he didn't have anything to say, but as you'll hear, he had plenty. Here's our conversation, all of us, with Jose Bautista before the game today.
What made you decide to finally get the cortisone shot?
Well, the progression wasn't going the way I expected or as quick as I expected, and looking for some relief, not only on the field and for my, you know, work life, but also regular life, you know, having... Throbbing pain at night is not necessarily enjoyable, and I was having to take pain medicine just to go to sleep, and that was messing up my stomach, and it was just time. We've been on the pain medicine for too long anyway, so it's time to cut that off and try alternatives, and this is the least invasive out of all the other alternatives that were left over. So,
in hindsight, would you wish you had done this a bit earlier?
No.
What's the immediate effect?
It wasn't even an option earlier, according to the doctors.
What's the immediate effect of getting the shot?
I don't know. We'll see. I mean, immediately, it hurt when the needle went in. And I was icing most of the day yesterday, so I was pretty numb from the ice. So it just hasn't been enough time. Normally, it takes 2 or 3 days, supposedly, to feel the effects. I've never had a cortisone shot. This is my first one ever, and I have no idea how this my body reacts to it and how my body responds. So I'll have to see. It's a wait and see.
You mentioned that it was the best of the alternatives. What are the alternatives?
Surgery, exploratory, more rest. You know, all the things that do not bring me out to right field any sooner. So.
Jose, were you feeling the pain that you described even before you started your throwing program again?
I have, yeah, it's just, I feel the same way. Nothing's changed. That's very, very slow progress. I wish it was quicker.
Could interleague play be a target for you to get back out in the outfield?
That's the ideal scenario. Going to the National League and wanting to be available more than just on pinch hit duties is definitely something that we'll consider as well with the timing of the shot.
Do you think it has affected your swing at all, or how your approach to the plate? Or you said before that it wouldn't bother you hitting, just throwing. You look back now, do you think there was any effects of your shoulder at the plate?
No.
Is it concerning at all to you that there's no structural damage and yet the pain doesn't go away for a month? You figure it would be gone sooner. Just from a personal perspective, like, why isn't this getting better already?
Well, no, I know exactly what's going on. I have inflammation. I have, you know, inflammation inside the shoulder joint, which causes an impingement. And the inflammation just was too slow to subside. And, you know, the oral medicine didn't work. We're trying, again, the least invasive but most aggressive next step.
Has anybody suggested that you have surgery?
No. That would be exploratory, which is not something that I would, you know, do right now, unless my career was in jeopardy. And because, again, when you take pictures, you look at the MRIs and the x-rays, and there's not much there other than inflammation. It would be pretty hard for all these doctors and experts that have looked at my MRIs to not see anything. So if you do an exploratory surgery, it would have to be absolutely last resort, because makes no sense unless it gets to the point where I cannot play anymore, and this would be the only way for me to get back on the field.
Because of the slow progress, that it's possible this might be something that lingers over the course of the year until you have an off season to rest it and then fully shut down and allow the year to heal?
I don't think so. It's inflammation. It's there until it starts going down, unless I irritate it again, and I have no reason to believe why this will just stick around for the long term.
Jose, considering that guys like David Ortiz make a living out of just swinging the bat, do you think we're making too much out of the fact that you can only hit right now?
No, I don't know. That's a weird and difficult question to answer, because I want to be out on the field and I'm a complete player and I feel like I can contribute on both sides. As long as I'm healthy right now, I'm not, so I can only DH. And because of, you know, the makeup of our team as well and the kind of position players that we have, and we have Navarro who's not here, and we have Smoke and Valencia, and Colabello and Edwin, it's just tough if we throw myself into that mix. It's too many players sort of in the same role, and definitely create a logjam and lack of bodies to go out on the outfield. So I don't know if you're making a big deal out of it or not. It's just I want to be back out on the field myself, just worse than any of you guys and any fan and anybody else. So,
does Edwin ask you every day if you're getting closer?
No, he doesn't really care. He's been one of the most supportive guys, and he said for me to take my time and make sure that I'm healthy and I'm not going to hurt myself any worse, because when I do come back, obviously he's one of the guys that wants me back on the field all the time.
Do you think that you might come back
last one again,
maybe on a limited basis, if you could play first every once in a while, or if you could only play left, maybe if you were throwing 50-60%, would you do that?
Left and right, there's not much difference. First base would be shorter, but if I'm out on the field, it's because I can compete. It's not because I'm good enough to throw 50% and it's just good enough to get by. I can't be out on defense hurting the team.
Confident. You'll be back in the lineup tomorrow? You'll be DH tomorrow?
I could hit today. It wasn't my decision.
So Jose Bautista, there you go, talking about everything that's gone on with him over the course of the last month. Surgery, he said, would be exploratory. He doesn't believe it's an option. He thinks he says he knows what it is. It's just taking longer than anybody expected to get out. And, you know, you have to really take him at his word. Blue Jays beat the White Sox 6-0 behind a phenomenal performance from Drew Hutchison tonight. And we're taking your calls right up till 11 o'clock Eastern time. Richard is in Toronto. Hello, Richard.
Hi, Mike. I'd like to talk more about the Jose Bautista issue because I think it's extremely important. And I know some callers have called in tonight and you've disagreed with them. And I feel that Jose Bautista should go on the 15-day DL. But it's got nothing to do with the fact that he's not the same Jose that we're used to, you know, the 50-homer guy. And it's got nothing to do with the fact that it would get Justin Smoke's bat into the lineup. It's got everything to do with the fact that we've seen some pretty porous outfield defense with infielders playing in the outfield, which have led to some glaring defensive miscues, particularly the two that Colabello made in the first two games of the Seattle series, both of which led to runs and which arguably cost the team two games. Is that not motivation for putting Jose on the 15-day DL so his shoulder can heal properly and he can get back out into right field?
Not for me. No, it's not. I see what you're saying, but putting him on the DL would bring up a better defensive outfielder so that you could DH Colabello and you know, lose a bat in the lineup, a guy who probably shouldn't be here. Those defensive miscues are glaring, it's true, and it's very clear that Colabello is playing out of position, that, you know, he said himself his best position is bat, and it's true, but he's an adequate enough defensive outfielder, and if the team scores runs, right, they're going to win games. You're talking about the mistakes made in games that they lost 4-3 and 3-2. A good offense will often disguise or minimize or mitigate, whatever word you want to use, those mistakes. But because your outfield defense is below average in the corners right now, to me, isn't a good reason to put a guy who's been one of your best hitters to have him not be able to play for you for 2 weeks.
Mm-hmm. But, I mean, at some point, sooner rather than later, don't we desperately need him in right field if we're going to make a serious run at the division?
I don't know about sooner rather than later. It's May 25th. I think, and like I said before, there are 115 games left in the season, and they're 3.5 games out of first place. So
I understand that, but I'm just wondering how him playing, you know, how to what effect is it exacerbating the problem?
And, he says it's not.
Well, he says it's not, but he's not a doctor.
But he's in consultation with his doctors. And there,
right.
I know there are a lot of doctors out there, you know, on Twitter and on the phone lines who think they know better. But
well, I'm not claiming that I do.
Right, but you're suggesting that shutting him down is going to help. And I think that as long as he's producing and as long as he's not in pain and is able to deal with it, I think he needs to be out there because he's still one of their best offensive players, even now with the shoulder thing.
I understand, but I guess what I'm asking, Mike, is, you know, can he heal just as fast by DHing as he could by shutting him down?
I don't think anybody knows the answer to that question.
Right.
But clearly it's not an overwhelming yes, which would probably have led them to shut him down or to think about shutting him down or you know, maybe put him on the disabled list on Monday if he's still not better when the Blue Jays go into that National League Park, and maybe we'll see that happen. But so far, there's been no suggestion by anyone involved that him not hitting will drastically speed the process of recovery for his shoulder.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Okay.
That was my point.
I appreciate it. I do. And I know that there are a lot of people who are very, very strong in their beliefs about this. But look, we need to go with the word of Bautista himself and the people who are examining him and treating him every single day. This isn't go to the doctor once every 10 days. This is treatment every day. And people seeing what he's capable of doing, what hurts, what doesn't, all that stuff. Taking MRIs, doing tests all the time. Steve is in Leroy. Hey, Steve.
Actually, it's Lefroy.
Is it?
Yes. A lot of people, like 400 people, may be offended if you say Leroy.
I'm sorry. And Mark Boffo's sorry for... Oh, there. He just stuck the F in there now. Nice. That's a nice job, Boffo. All right. My apologies.
Anyway, Mike, first off, always enjoyed listening to you. I find you very knowledgeable, very entertaining, and you know way more about baseball than I do, so I learn something every time.
Oh, thank you.
So my question is, I know all the big trades are made at the trade deadline, and that's when you get the huge starting pitcher and the big bat and everything else.
Well, maybe. I mean, certainly not till like the end of June, you would think.
Yeah. So what I'm talking about for trades is I would like a middle reliever or an outfielder, and I was wondering about the guys that are on the DL right now, like Meiser Sturis, Deion Navarro, and maybe a guy like Valencia, Jose Reyes just came off, and I was wondering if Goins has shown enough that Reyes may be a trade bait thing. Can we get an outfielder? Can we get a middle reliever for any of those guys?
Well, you can't get anything for someone who's hurt. So you can take Asturias and Navarro out of that conversation right now. But, yeah, I mean, I don't know that there's a team out there that wants to get Danny Valencia for a middle reliever, and I don't know that the Blue Jays should be willing to give up Danny Valencia for a middle reliever. Certainly not a Jose Reyes. Jose Reyes, and I feel like I say this all the time on this program, but I guess it needs to be said. When Jose Reyes is right, and we've barely seen that over his entire career as a Blue Jay, when Jose Reyes is right, he's one of the best players in the game. You know, there's a reason that he's making the money that he's making, and this is a guy who's close to 2,000 hits in his career. We haven't seen the real Jose Bautista, Jose Reyes, pardon me, at any point except for the first 9 days of his Blue Jays career. And if you do, if we get that, then the very thought that Ryan Goins might be preferable to him, it would just never enter your mind. I don't know. I get that Ryan Goins is a superior defensive player and all that wonderful stuff, but he is nowhere near the ball player that Jose Reyes is, period. So no, Ryan Goins' fine work at shortstop I don't think has made Jose Reyes expendable. But you know, to get a solid middle reliever, but I don't know if there is such a thing as a solid middle reliever. Those guys are so back and forth and so up and down, and you know, it's not worth giving up an asset to get one, a real asset. Danny Valencia is a phenomenal hitter against left-handed pitching. That's a real asset. Stuff like that. Would I trade Meiser Asturias? Yeah, I'd trade Meiser Asturias, because even when he is healthy and gets back, he doesn't fit really anymore, because you want to have Travis at second and Reyes at short and Goins as your utility infielder. But again, given what's gone on with Meiser the last couple of years, you're not going to get anything for him. You're almost better off trying to find a guy on waivers and hoping that he turns it around once he gets here and has the one good two-thirds of a season that he's going to have over a 9-year career, and it happens here.
Okay. Well, thank you for answering the question. The other comment or question I might have is, Alex Anthopoulos, everyone's calling for his head. Do you think that judgment on general managers should be made at the beginning of the season? Because everyone said his offseason was phenomenal.
It's
and
interesting.
Now, when
yeah.
things are not going as everyone thought they may have, they're calling for his head. I thought he made all the great moves in the offseason. He added Russell Martin and Josh Donaldson, huge additions. He was not able to shore up relief, but I thought he did a phenomenal job. And but just in general, should general managers be made on or questions on their firing be made on results or expectations?
It's a good question. I think that you should, you know, you can only, as I've said a bunch of times, you can only deal with the information you have at the time. And if you look at what a general manager does, what was the information at the time that he made that move? Why did he make that move? How did that move look at the time? You know, no one's a clairvoyant. No one's a soothsayer. No one knows. You know, as much as you could talk about super scouts or whatever, nobody knows. And so many can't-miss guys have so completely missed. And so many 30th-round draft picks have turned into good ball players. You just, it's so, nobody knows what's going to happen. So you kind of have to, for me, look at the moves that are made, when they were made, why did this happen? Does this make sense? Why did he do this? What did he get? What did he give up? All that sort of thing. Was it a good risk? And the, and when you say, was it a good risk, that doesn't mean did it wind up paying off, but was it a good risk? Was it likelier than not? Was it, you know, something like that? And for me, I think that's how you rate a general manager. I don't know that you do it at the beginning of a season or the middle of a season or the end of a season. You do it over the course of a tenure. And, you know, if you wind up with way more good than bad, if you wind up with somebody who's doing a good job building a franchise, then I think that's someone that you hang on to. For me, anyway, for me, Alex Anthopoulos has done a terrific job as general manager. Has everything worked out? No. Has he totally destroyed every opposing team and every trade he's made? No. But nobody does. He's done a very good job. And I hope that that is seen by the bosses when the time comes to decide whether he's going to come back or not. Because if he's fired, then the next GM, whoever he is going to be taking a lot of bows based on a lot of things that Alex Anthopoulos brought to this team. Tonight, a big win for the Blue Jays. They beat the Chicago White Sox 6-0. They've won 2 in a row. They've won 5 of 16. And unbelievably, they're 3.5 games out of first place right now in the American League East. That's just, it's just silly. We'll be back tomorrow at 7. R.A. Dickey against John Danks. We will talk to you then. Good night, everybody.